Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We have all been watching the news about the undercount, the overcount, I should say, of students in our Baltimore City schools and how that's affecting not just the enrollments, but how that affects funding for our schools, and how added to that is the how the state calculates the notion of wealth to determine who gets what money for which school system gets how much money. And we're going to tackle all that and more in the course of this hour, and really just the future of education system. I think that we've been covering this intensely for the last 23 years in the air. And as you know, that I spent many years working for the Baltimore City Public School System as well, working on their in special needs counseling. So I've been involved in schools for a long time and was a principal for a short while. So all that to say that education is a very important issue for me, and I think for our children and for our families and our future. And we're going to wrestle with some of that here in the conversation today. We have joining us in studio Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education at Morgan State University, where she is also Coordinator of Graduate Programs in Mathematics and Science Education, and sits on the parent-teacher.
No, not anymore. I used to be a former PCAP member.
Oh, no, you're not. Yeah, PCAP is no more. Okay.
Well, they're there, but I'm not.
Gotcha. Frank Patinella is with us. Frank Patinella is co-chair of the Baltimore Education Coalition, an advocate with the Education Reform Project at the American Civil Liberties Union of Maryland. Luke Broadwater is reporter for the Baltimore Sun, who covers City Hall and local politics. Good to have you all with us, and welcome. We are going to start a conversation, though, with Lena Leone for the first few minutes to get an update here. She's a Greenmount West community president, and I got a email last night from Carol Higgs, who lives in Greenmount West, about a school board decision around the students in that community being allowed to go or not go in certain numbers to the charter school in that community, the Montessori school. And we've been following this. We talked about it the other week and got the stats there. It showed us that 48% of the students at Greenmount West were white, which is a huge number in Baltimore City. And so the people in the residents and community wanted more slots in that school. So we're just going to get an update, and we'll make that part of our conversation. Alina, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
So tell us.
There's a correction.
Go ahead.
It's 48% of the students at the Baltimore Montessori School are white, and
right,
that's not the case in the neighborhood.
No, that's right, exactly. That's what I'm saying, that, yeah, that the school is 48% white. The neighborhood is predominantly African-American and poor and working class. So, yeah, so that's talk about what happened at the school board.
So they will be voting tonight on a waiver that the Baltimore Montessori School added to their charter renewal, requesting 30% of available slots in the school be given to Greenmount West residents. Now, this isn't the first request we've made. We've actually been working on this for a really long time. So the school has been requesting this for a really long time. We've even actually gone up to the state level. Some parents in this community have assisted in contributing to the charter school law that passed last session, Senate Bill 595. And we're just trying to advocate for access to the school in our neighborhood.
So talk about what's at stake here. I mean, part of this is the fact that you have this really strong charter school in the midst of the neighborhood. And, you know, we had somebody say on the show the other day that I really disagreed with, saying, well, part of the reason is that black parents don't want their children going to a less structured school because it's Montessori. Mm-hmm. But talk about the issues as you see from a resident standpoint, what they're asking for here.
From a resident standpoint, from what I understand, they don't understand the method, but that's not entirely true across the board, because of the 34 students in Baltimore Montessori that come from Greenmount West, 29 of them are African American, and they want a better choice for their kids' education.
So before we move on, and Luke Broadwater is with us now, just for a minute. Luke, do you want to comment on this? What's happening from your perspective, reporting on?
I'm sorry, I'm coming to the conversation late. I didn't hear the.
Oh, my apologies. Yeah. I should write that note. I overlooked it. I'm sorry. But we're just talking about the decision around residents of Greenmount West being able to go to the charter school at Montessori. Have you been following that at all?
No. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not prepared to speak on that issue.
Just checking, because I thought you were, you know, just, I know Luke Broadwater is on top of it. I just want to make sure if you had it.
Right, yeah.
No problem.
I know about most things most of the time, but sorry, I need to research that one.
Well, this is a very critical issue, and it's one that I've gone back and forth with a number of foundations in town, what's happening at places like the Montessori School. And Lena, I appreciate you taking, Lena Leone taking the time this morning. It was very brief, but we wanted to get you in here with that thought. We'll check in with you tomorrow after the Board of Education vote.
Thank you.
And look at this as our continuing coverage of what's happening with charter schools. But Lena, thanks so much, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks.
I want to just get in there because I thought it was important. And when I got that email last night, I think that all these issues around what happens to our children in these schools are critical for us to kind of understand, and the battle around charters and who gets what in our community. But so let me jump right into where we are right now, The controversy we're facing now, which is huge, really, over the question of enrollment numbers in our schools, how that adds to the amount of money being decreased from the state to our city schools. And Luke, can you give us a quick broad overview, then we'll jump right into the heart of it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the state funding for education this year, almost every jurisdiction in Maryland is getting more money than they were before, except for Baltimore City. Baltimore City is getting $24 million less from the state government. And there are two factors that are in play at that. The first is that the city schools have lost about 2,000 students year over year, which is a very high number considering the school system has only about 80,000 students. So and there are a couple of reasons for that. One, Dr. Gregory Thornton went through and his staff went through the rolls and identified a number of so-called ghost students. These are students that rarely come to class, if ever, maybe have never come to class, yet have been on the rolls and qualifying for state aid. The other factor is this, and I don't think they want to talk about this factor quite as much, is that students have left the city schools. Either they've gone to private schools or they've moved elsewhere, but that's a large drop, 2,000 in a single year. The other factor, which I wrote about in this morning's paper, is that Baltimore, year over year, and for the past 2 years, actually, has gotten significantly wealthier. We may not see that going around the city, but on paper, the city is much, much wealthier in just 2 years. They grew by 10% in wealth, which is an incredible amount in the last year under the education formula. But the problem is that since much of the wealth has been generated using tax subsidies, it's not like the city government has a ton of more tax revenue now that they can just give to the city schools. So those are the two things that are really impacting the $24 million cut to the city schools.
And Frank, talking a bit about your coalition before we turn to Dr. Ellington.
Sorry, Mark, can you repeat that question?
Frank, I just want you to follow up on what Luke was saying and in terms of where you see the battle lines being drawn right now. What's happening?
Well, I think Luke covered it pretty well. You know, the governor's budget, I believe it includes a $25 million loss. I think that estimate has gone up $1 million just to try to be accurate here.
Okay.
And, you know, the coalition saying given the unrest and uprising over the past year, now is not the time to cut funding from city public schools. Now is the time to invest. You know, we're asking the governor to use surplus funding to fill in the gap. And we've heard estimates up to $450 million in surplus that the state has. The governor's offered three other counties, Garrett, Kent, Carroll, to fill in their gap because of slipping enrollment numbers. And we think that's a great thing. There's counties that are struggling with enrollment loss, and the governor is stepping in to help. We're asking for the same treatment. Filling the $25 million gap is a small step just to keep city schools' budget flat. The city schools, you know, city students don't need any less in the classrooms. We need to keep as many teachers, paraprofessionals, programs, such as after-school and community school programs in schools.
Ronnie?
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, when you look at formula, I'm a mathematician by training, and you look at the numbers and you look at the shortfall and you say, oh, that's fair. There was a statement to say, well, Baltimore City gets more per student than any other county.
Right.
And they don't have these 200 students, so it's a per student budgeting equation. And then we got this mystery wealth that we have that really isn't real wealth on paper. So mathematically, it makes sense that, well, that equals $25 million less. And that's what the governor is arguing. What keeps plaguing me is, you know, what Gloria Ladson Billings talked about, this whole debt, not necessarily wealth. Like, you know, there's this educational debt that we in America have not addressed. When you talk about historic inequities of funding and resources, and Baltimore City is such a place where historically there's been underfunding, there's been dilapidation of resources, you know, just all of the inner city issues. So when you look at the formula, so on the one hand, I can see the governor saying, well, it's fair, right? It's fair. You don't have these 200 students. I give you X number per student, and therefore you lose X amount of money. You have this wealth that's mysterious, but you still have this wealth in the city. So why should we be subsidizing that? So all of those arguments, as a mathematician, sound like logical arguments. Like, how do you argue with the numbers, right? But it's not just about that. It's about the human dynamic of what is needed. And then with the surplus, why not? And so, you know, it's like the chicken and the egg conversation. It's like, okay, I can see from a mathematical standpoint, he's just using a formula. You know, I use formulas all day. But, you know, and this is what it equals. But then the question becomes, why are we holding to that, knowing that this system needs money and that students need resources or whatever? What now beholds us to the formula? So that's a human conversation. That's not a money conversation, because formulaically, the governor is absolutely correct.
So,
you know what I mean?
No.
In terms of this is how it shakes out, if you will. But when you look at it holistically, there's some other things that are not being considered, that are not in the formula, that I think we should be really concerned about.
So how do you what's the political process here, Frank Battenlo, from your perspective? And then we go on to Luke about answer the same question. Just about what we do not take into the social equation and
the history and the Baltimore City historic relationship to the state, and just this whole lots of things that are not in the formula equation that the governor is saying. Again, that is his argument. I give you X amount of money per student. You have these ghost students, so I then reduce your funding by this amount. And you have this wealth in the city that was generated by, like you said, primarily tax subsidies, not real wealth, but it's still wealth on the books. So then that justifies me reducing your funding.
So Frank, what's the argument you use then around this? One of our guests coming up in the next half an hour, Delegate Shalega, who is saying that Baltimore City Schools is getting too much money as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's several things here. Number one, over the recent years, there's been cuts to education funding statewide. You know, education funding during the Great Recession has remained flat for several years, while costs have significantly rose. So, you know, healthcare costs, utilities, energy, transportation, food, materials, and everything, all those costs go up, but funding has been held flat. So, you know, something's got to give at some point, and we've seen there's been some budget problems at city schools in the past few years. So we're not right now, we're currently not at adequacy, and even by the state's own measures, city schools is still about $2,000 per pupil below what the state calls adequate funding. So I can't understand why they're making that that assessment, that judgment, when mm-hmm. you know, funding was cut. And you know, this was the promise of the Thornton Law. We have not reached adequate funding, and right now the funding formula is under reevaluation. We are the ACLU is a stakeholder, part of the stakeholder group. And so we're monitoring, we're weighing in and reviewing everything that the consultants are doing for MSDE to reevaluate this formula. And there's a lot of things that can be improved. This wealth factor is one. Delegate McIntosh has actually filed a bill this year to address the TIF issue to hold the city harmless for these wealth increases. Also, we're looking at funding full-day pre-K. City schools funds full-day pre-K but does not receive funding to do so. There's a little bit of funding, but it's not per pupil funding, and it's only for a half day. But city schools, I think rightfully, has decided to hold to implement full day pre-K programs,
right,
which is very important for students at risk, but they're not receiving per pupil funding to do so.
So
the other thing is funding programs like community schools. One of the things that that the consultants are looking at in the reevaluation of the funding formula is the effects of concentrated poverty on academic achievement for students. So, you know,
I'm sorry, Frank. I want to get Luke to come in. Luke, to before we open the phones here, and talk about the political dynamic here as well, because the part of what we're seeing here is that people are blaming the city for mm-hmm. granting TIFs and pilots so that, you know, that we don't get the money coming into the city, but the wealth of the real estate property continues to grow from the casino to the Inner Harbor East and the rest. And others are blaming, saying that the whole question of how we fund our schools in the state is inequitable. So talk a bit about that political dynamic.
Sure. And I think that we will see this continue to heat up. I mean, the one thing I think that many will argue in the city and elsewhere is that the governor is still sitting on $68 million that was appropriated last year by the General Assembly, which has nothing to do with this year's budget, and literally is sitting there just doing nothing. And $11 million of that would go to Baltimore. So if he were to finally agree to that, well, that would certainly help the city's schools. The other thing is, as your guest mentioned, the governor did do three supplemental appropriations outside of this budget to various school systems.
Mm-hmm.
Why not Baltimore, which is giving a $24 million cut? I think we'll hear that argument. I also think that we will see more and more scrutiny on the special tax deals that have been granted over the years, and some efforts to try to change some of the state's formulas with regards to them. That's something that hasn't really been considered or highlighted that much in the past, despite the city council being warned about it multiple times. In 2011, there was a report by a special committee that warned this could happen. And then in 2013, the former state planning commissioner testified before the city council saying that Harbor Point could cause up to $200 million in loss to school funds over its lifetime, and that should be considered. To date, they have not been considering school funds in the equation when they consider whether to award these projects. So maybe we'll start seeing more of that in the future, too. That's something else I expect to come out of this.
So let me go to the phones here and come back to Ronnie, who's here in the studio. Ronnie Ellington, 410-319-8888 is the number. Susan, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Susan. Good morning. Do we have our phones working? Susan, you're there?
Hi, good morning. Sorry.
Morning.
Yep. Good morning, everyone. I was actually going to say a lot of very similar to the points that Frank just raised about the fact that the funding formula over a period of several years has been whittled away. So the formula we're operating under right now is not the formula that the Thornton Commission put forward as an attempt to get to adequacy in funding. And then the state standards that the Thornton Commission used in 2000 were, you know, pre-MSAs, and now we're at Common Core. We have huge percentages of kids not reading on grade level in third grade. So I think that the reality of the situation, the class sizes, the conditions of school buildings, what we understand about today, about what we need to put into the classroom, both in resources with the teaching and learning and also with additional supports, helps us to realize that irrespective of what the formula says, our kids need more resources, and it's up to the governor to recognize that need and to offer the additional assistance to Baltimore City in the same way that he's done that for other counties in the state of Maryland.
That was my point. It's interesting. Ronnie we Ellington. Keep talking about this argument being made. You know, again, the mathematician in me just keeps coming out. Like, the fact that we're actually arguing about this says something is in the background. If this was another school district that had this shortfall and there was a surplus, what is the argument about? This is the part that no one talks about. So there has to be all of these cases made as opposed to the school needs it. We got it. Give it to them. Why is that just not straightforward? That's the question I want to ask all of our guests and people. Why? What is the real backdrop that says we have to be arguing about the fact that, again, you argue when you don't have it, like, oh, we don't have it. So, okay, but you have the surplus. There's money sitting somewhere. The students need it. People have made excellent points as to why this is needed, but we're still arguing. Why? So please help me, y'all. Help me understand what then makes this still a case for how you have to argue to get the money when it's there and available. If this was another school district with another configuration, would we even be having this discussion? Is my question.
Frank and Luke, you want to jump very quickly into this question before we have another caller for a break? Luke, Frank?
Schools, and sees that none of the water fountains work because they have lead in the pipes, that sees that many schools don't have heat or air conditioning, that sees that many classrooms are overcrowded, a lot of kids don't have books, would not say that Baltimore City is flush with cash and needs a $24 million cut. So I think that really it's about education, about the conditions in the city schools and how the city is not flush with money from all these new properties that have come online, and that, you know, this money is not... is in fact needed.
And I think that's the point I'm making. No one's addressing why are we still arguing about this? Is it because of the demographics of the city? Are we really going to have a real straight conversation as to why we're even still arguing? We already know that the school has been underfunded. We already know that it's under-resourced, and we already know that the cuts are being made, but we're still arguing. What is that about?
Luke, let me let you jump in before you have to run.
Sure. Yeah, one last point to address it. I think you're getting at a very good point here, which is that you have this natural tension between Republicans in the suburban counties and how they view the city school system. They view it as a money-losing pit that is full of waste, and they're very reluctant and frankly critical of the governor if he spends money on the city schools. And so he is very astute to that and likes to satisfy his base.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I think that anybody, like as I said before, if you walk through the city schools and see all the problems at them, it's hard to really argue that these places don't need the money.
Let me get a call here, Luke. I know you got to run, but thank you so much for taking your time.
Thanks. Thank you. Take care.
You too. Luke Broadwater, reporter for the Sun, who covers City Hall and local politics. Let's go to the phones and get a call here on our way to break at 410-319-8888. Is it Edith? Is that right? Gary, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to respond to was it the president of the Greenmount West Association?
Oh, who's on the very top of the hour? Just mm-hmm. Right.
Because there wasn't an alternative position presented on that issue. So the vote that, if the board meeting happens tonight, is going to be taken, is a vote that's actually going to set a precedent for how GAA or geographic attendance area waivers are going to be handed out to charter schools in the future. It's actually an extremely important vote for the future of traditional public schools in the system, because the waivers will...
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Say that again.
The waivers would allow charter schools to share students with existing traditional schools. The reason I'm actually... I've become well-versed in this over the past few days because my school was actually suggested as one of the schools in a wider catchment area that could have alleviated the effect of the Greenmount West waiver for Montessori by adding more schools to absorb the blow that Dallas Nicholas is going to feel if this waiver is granted. In my view, this waiver should never be granted unless the traditional school in the charter GAA area is over-enrolled.
Let me just say this. This is something I think that it's a very important. We brought it on top of the hour because of the email I got. I hear what you're saying. And what I will do here, and my producer's listening as I do this all the time, is listening to me at the moment, but I will. We're going to go back to charter schools in the next, and very soon, and wrestle with this issue. I think and we'll come back to it. So I think it is important. I think it really speaks to a lot about where the dysfunction right now our schools are in when it comes to charters versus neighborhood schools. Questions of if a neighborhood school has a principal with connections, they get more money and can bring more money in to their schools while other schools suffer, like Dallas Nichols. and which are right on the block from a Montessori school, which gets money from lots of places mm-hmm. because of who runs the school. So there are all these contradictions in there that I think that really we have to wrestle with, and we will come back to that. I appreciate your laying out the fact from a different perspective on Dallas Nichols, and I'm glad you called in. We have to take a really brief break here. We're going to come right back. And when we come back from this break, we are going to be joined as well by Delegate Kathy Schlegel, who is the House Minority Whip, who has many things to say about her opinions of Baltimore City Schools. Remaining with us is Dr. Ronnie Ellington and Frank Pancinella, and you at 410-319-8888, which means Dr. Irma Johnson and Kenneth. Your voices will be heard. Please stay with us. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And before we jump into our conversation, to continue where we left off with school funding in Baltimore with our guests, and also being joined now by Delegate Kathy Schlegel, who is House Minority Whip representing District 7 in Baltimore and Hartford counties, and joining Frank Pancinella, advocate with the Education Reform Project at the American Civil Liberties Union of Maryland, and Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education at Morgan State University. There's some breaking news we just wanted to share with you since we've covered this topic a lot. Today, the Maryland State Senate overrode Governor Larry Hogan's veto of legislation, House Bill 980, Senate Bill 340, restoring voting rights to 40,000 formerly incarcerated persons in the state, which means they will be allowed to register to vote after they are released. With the House having voted last month, the new law will go into effect March 6th, which means the newly eligible Maryland voters will be able to register to vote in the upcoming primary. So that was just breaking news, came across the transom. We wanted to share with you because I'm sure you all wanted to know that. So we're joined here, as I said, by Delegate Schlegel, Frank Pancinella, and Dr. Ronnie Ellington. And you at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Stein, and we have a bunch of tweets that have come in that I will look at here in a moment. But 410-319-8888. Delegate Schlegel, welcome. Good to have you with us once again.
Great. Always good to be with you, Mark.
So give us your perspective here on the battle looming over the school funding. We talked a lot in the first half an hour about how this formula was created by Baltimore Wealth and how that was calculated in. And to me, in the lower enrollments. So tell me your perspective on funding for city schools.
Yeah, and I'm sorry I missed. I was on the floor of the House.
That's what you're supposed to be. You're a delegate.
As you know, we're in every day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at 10, and I was, you know, business is shortened for the next couple weeks. So I was glad I could get finished and join you guys at 11. You know, just for a little perspective, my kids went to Baltimore City Public Schools. And I taught in Baltimore Public Schools, Baltimore City Public Schools. So, you know, I have a heart for the city and the school system. And, my grandpa went to Poly and my mom went to Eastern and, you know, a long family tradition of Baltimore City Public Schools. But, I have to say that what's missing in this whole conversation is an emphasis on the quality of education and student performance. And, you know, I have to tell you, Mark, when I go to town halls and speak with people about education, which is such an important issue, they're always shocked to find out that we spend $17,000 per pupil in Baltimore City. And that does not include capital funding, which are large major construction projects or large repairs like a new roof. So, you know, estimates on that will go up to about $21,000 a student. All the while at maybe, let's say, a St. Ursula, which is over in my part of Baltimore County, I think their tuition's about $6,000 a student. And Calvert Hall, you know, premier, obviously, all-boys school is, I think, $14,000 a student. So, you know, when you put the comparison in there, I would really like to change the conversation to performance. What quality of education are we delivering for $17,000 a student?
Okay.
This is Dr. Ronnie Ellington.
And then hello.
We'll go to the phones and Frank Panatello.
Again, I go back to my education debt argument that Gloria Ladson-Billings made about we try to make numbers, we mask realities by numbers. So I hear you say that to go to Calvert Hall is $14,000 a year. But what you don't say is that the people who can actually afford to send their kids there is among the wealthiest people we have.
Oh, so I don't know about that, ma'am.
Well, let's just think about it.
Well,
let me finish. Can you let me finish?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, so to even know about Calvert Hall, to have a history, to go there, there is, I'm not saying that there are not financial aid and so forth. We're not going to go with that. But to try to compare a public school system with a private school tuition-based system is an unfair comparison.
Well, I would say that if you ask some parents, whom I'm around, lots of parents.
And I'm around parents, too, because
right.
my kid goes to Baltimore City Schools. So
right.
we're in that whole arena of asking parents. Yes go ahead.
And as I said, my kids went to Baltimore City Public Schools as
what
well.
What year? When?
My kids are almost 30 and
okay.
28.
Okay,
so.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the demographics of Baltimore City were very different.
Let me let the delegate finish. Go ahead.
Maybe,
delegate?
Maybe not that much different.
Well, it's different. You said Polly. Yeah, you said, I know. Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
Didn't go to Poly.
Were they here when it was a predominantly African American base? That's my question to you.
Sure. 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Demographics haven't changed that much in 10 years.
Okay, got it. So it was more quality there than it is now. And
15,
what do you think is the difference?
15 years. But let me just say this. So if you said to a parent in the city, you know, St. Ursula is $6,000 a year, which by the way, those are not wealthy parents, that you know, those are real middle class folks that go to St. Ursula. And I would ask, say, that if you visited some Baltimore City public schools and said, hey, you know, how about you can send your child to this other school for, and pick a, you know, I'm just picking St. Ursula because it's in my area and I know about it and I used to coach soccer there and, you know, I have a legacy there of people. Anyway, I think that parents would say, hey, you know, maybe for $6,000 I could do that. And then guess what? Baltimore City Public Schools all of a sudden has saved $11,000.
So what is your point? That's what I'm trying to get
well,
at. I'm not getting the point.
And, you know, I diverted from my original point. So let me go back to my original point. My original point is, you know, we have to fund our schools. And I am all in favor of that. It is imperative that we have an educated society. It is. I have a degree in education, so I am committed to that. But instead of always talking about how much money you're putting in, let's talk about where the money's going. And when we find out that the Baltimore City Public Schools are spending $99 per person on fried chicken dinners that you could buy at KFC for $8.
Are you really going to go there?
I am.
Wow, that is so low. That is a low blow.
Oh, my.
And I will not allow that to be the center of the conversation.
Well, it's not
that
the
is a
center.
Low blow.
It's
go
not
ahead.
The center
you
of the
are
conversation.
This is a very interesting conversation.
It's not the center of the conversation, but it has to be part of the
really?
Conversation. Because that money was supposed to go for our poorest, most needy kids.
Oh, my goodness.
And that money came from President Obama, came to Baltimore City to serve our poorest kids.
So that's the total, that's the reason why we're in this situation, because of a $99 chicken dinner?
No, I never said that.
So you're
ma'am.
Bringing up a conversation that is a sidebar conversation to make a point, and that is not fair.
Oh, I think it's fair.
Okay, well, that's why you get to divert the conversation. And this is what people do when they don't want to talk about historic inequities and they don't want to talk about the real issue. They talk about a $99 fried chicken dinner as if that is the reason why we're in this situation. That is not the reason.
Let me let the delegate finish her thought and go to Frank or other guests as well.
Well, I would go back to looking at the quality of education that we're providing. And again, that's what we need to be talking about. As a lawmaker, we look at, okay, we want to adequately fund our schools, and then we have a responsibility as lawmakers to look at performance and audit and look at how is that money being spent.
So can we talk about performance?
If we need more money to adequately educate our kids, let's do it. But let's make sure the money that you're getting today is being properly spent. And, you know, we've changed. I can remember 5 years ago when I first got elected, I sat on the Education Subcommittee of Appropriations. And I have to tell you, I was dismayed greatly when I learned that 50% of the kids in Baltimore City that start ninth grade drop out of high school.
So let me turn to Frank Patinella. And also say we've gotten tweets in here. Melissa just tweeted in, unfair to compare public and private. Calvert doesn't have to accept everyone as public schools do. They refuse special needs students.
Thank you.
Hey, Mark.
Frank, go ahead.
Yes, Mark. Thank you. I'm a graduate of Calvert Hall College High School. And I can tell you the population is vastly different than Baltimore City.
Thank you, brother.
Enrollment. There is no comparison here.
There's no comparison. Really?
Types of families. Let me try to finish here. There's no comparison in terms of the types of families that send their kids to Calvert Hall that can afford that. The delegate mentioned middle class families going to that one school. I think you said St. Ursula's. We're not talking about middle-class families in Baltimore City schools.
Thank you.
For the most part. We're talking about a population that we have, an over 86 or around 86% free and reduced meals rate. It's probably higher than that because in the elementary schools where the kids are more likely to fill out the forms are up around 90% or so. And, you know, by high school, the kids stop, you know, filling out the forms because they don't want to be labeled as a poor child or for whatever, they don't like the food or for whatever reason. But the other differences between private and public is that there are rigorous state standards that the state has adopted, and Common Core is one of them. Calvert Hall and other private schools do not have to meet those standards. Also, there's a requirement for serving kids that have special needs. I can tell you when I was at Calvert Hall, there was nowhere near the level of needs in terms of special education at that school than there are in Baltimore City. So there's a lot of differences here. And just the, you know, Calvert Hall doesn't have to deal with a population of students that come from poverty. And they don't have to deal with concentrated poverty in their schools or neighborhood issues, all kinds of issues that are challenges for city students and families and neighborhoods.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888.
So let me go back to something that you just said. And absolutely, I'm not saying that we don't need to make an investment in Baltimore City Public Schools. I think I've said it four or five times. But, you know, we also need to hold people accountable. And that's how the system works. You talk about rigor. Well, I would challenge you to say that, you know, charter schools and private schools have very rigorous education and are delivering an education that's very high quality. So, you know, that's exactly what I want to talk about. Is how can we deliver a high-quality education to our kids? We must do that. And by looking solely at how much money you're spending and not looking at performances and how that money's being spent, I think you're not serving our students well.
So, Frank, let me jump in. I have a question for you all. I do want to get to the phones here. Good. Frank?
I think the delegate raises a great point. I think accountability is something that we're all concerned about. There are, you know, I'm co-chair of the Baltimore Education Coalition, and there's other education advocates out there, and we are all very involved with, you know, at the school level and at the school system level where we see the budget come through and we participate in that process and the policies that, you know, get adopted by the school system. There's a lot of engagement and people watching the system. And I think, you know, we have to do a better, there has to be, you know, a better way to hold the system accountable. Right now we have an opportunity to get the funding right with this adequacy study. So I don't want, you know, I think it's unfair to say everything is mismanagement.
Oh, I'm not saying that.
We have to get the adequacy study right.
Well, recommendations
have to come before the legislature, and if that includes measures of accountability, then we can work on that together.
That's great. I love to hear that because I think that's what people want. They want to hear some accountability and auditing, and a willingness on the part of the Baltimore City Public Schools to embrace these things. Because, again, folks want to make sure that we're adequately and sufficiently funding education, but when we hear about things like ghost students, you know, attendance records that are being falsified,
Well, nobody said they were falsified.
They were not falsified. Please, please do not say that again, because that's not the case. Actually, Thornton did his private investigation to reconcile the attendance, to see where, you know what I'm saying? This was something they took on.
I was very proud of him doing
that. Okay, so
that,
let's call a thing a thing. That's all I want to say. It wasn't, yeah.
Well, I mean,
okay.
They were not properly, you know, teachers.
And that happens in all school systems.
Well, okay.
Yes.
Let's not continue to pass the buck here.
It's not about passing the buck. It's about being fair in what you articulate about schools.
And, you know, I'll just point to a, quote, excessive generous leave payouts from the Baltimore Sun article March 22nd, 2015, where they did an investigation on paid out bonuses and overtime pay that amounted to $46 million. Other school system does that. When the former interim CEO departed, she got $217,000 in a bonus to leave. That's not serving our students well.
Well, I mean, but almost every CEO in every school
exactly.
system in the state.
Really?
Wait,
why are you passing the buck?
No,
take responsibility.
Ladies, let me just jump in here.
Mark.
I mean, I think almost every school system in the state, they have contracts with CEOs leave and leave with money when they have to leave the system. It's
but
not just Baltimore
every
City.
School system in the state is coming back Maryland and saying we need more money.
But wait,
yes,
wait.
They are. Because they're getting more money.
Other members of the cabinet, each hired after 07, had a base salary over $150,000 and left with additional payouts that ranged from $13,000 to $76,000.
I don't know what the cabinet, but I do know that most CEOs of major school systems have that in their contracts.
Exactly.
In our state, Frederick County, Baltimore County.
Well, you don't think we should look at that?
Let me ask you this question, though. The question is, I think that, because when we talked about Calvert Hall and talk about other school systems in the city, is there not a difference between school systems and private schools that cater to mostly upper middle class white students,
and
school systems that cater to children who live in dire poverty, been left out of the system for decades and centuries, and we're talking about what has to happen in their lives in the city and in other parts of the state as well, where this takes place, whether it's Cambridge, Maryland, other places.
I can't agree with you more. They have been left out of the system for decades. This is the same system that has been underserving our kids for decades. And that's what I'm worked up about. And you know, I want to hear how we're going to serve our kids better. And if it's a matter of allowing them to utilize other schools, let's do it. That's what's working in Manhattan. It's working in D.C.
But it's not really.
Really working in D.C. I'm from D.C. It's not working. The demographics of D.C. have changed so drastically to imply that it's working would be an understatement.
So you're not willing to even try anything different.
No, it's not that.
Definition of insanity?
But I think, no, you keep bringing up points that don't attack the issue. You keep bringing up these side points as if they're the main dish. So let me talk about quality versus performance. I am an educational researcher. Most of the variance in performance is dictated, 80% in most studies, is outside of school factors that impact for performance. Most of the variance, when you talk about what has a student succeed over time in schoolings, is socioeconomic status, resources, and things that the school are not even accountable for. That is a fact. If you look at educational research across the last 30 years, the biggest correlate to achievement has been socioeconomic status and resources outside of school. That's what's been correlating to performance, not just with. And so 20% we can measure within schools. So you're saying that the schools have to compensate for 80%. That is unrealistic.
Well, and I would, you know, respectfully disagree.
Okay.
And say
you can
that,
respectfully disagree, but, yeah, but the data that, shows that.
Well, and I would point to the data of a school like the Kitts School.
But the Kitts School.
And some of these other charter schools, they're doing a great job. And they're educating our kids at an amazing, amazing rate. And these are the same kids from the same neighborhood.
But we also see, I mean, I think the studies have come out from other sources of, we've clearly shown that there's very little. There's a small gap between the achievement of most charter schools
Thank
and most
you.
Public schools.
That's not the the data
is.
And the research.
What are you
I've
looking
read.
At?
But let's just say, I think
you've
got to stop yelling at me.
The other point on that is that charter schools receive more money per pupil.
Oh no, they don't. No, they don't. $17,000 per pupil for Baltimore City Public Schools. Charter schools get about half of that. So they, you're absolutely incorrect on that.
No. Baltimore City students get a per pupil around about $3,000 more when it's distributed to the school by the school system.
No. That's not true.
We can't even agree on the facts, so we can't have a conversation.
Let me just jump in and get this, come to the facts right here and why we disagree on the facts. So, Frank, very quickly, Delegate, let me let you lay out those facts you just laid out, and let me let Frank then respond with the facts he thinks are real. Delegate? In terms of per pupil spending?
Oh, you want me to talk about that?
You go first, and then we'll turn to Frank.
Yes. So I do not have the exact numbers on the per pupil spending for charters, but I know that they're about half of what the Baltimore City $17,000 again, plus the capital, it comes up to about $21,000 per pupil. And, I did vote for that capital $1 billion for facilities. I know it's imperative that we have those. I mean, I'm committed to helping the Baltimore City Public School System be successful. And I'm disappointed that there are so many people defending what we have going on today instead of willing to say, let's try some audits, let's try some performance measures, let's try some new things, because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Frank Patinella.
When the money comes to the school system from the state, the city, and the federal government, that all adds up to be a high per pupil. Once that funding goes to city schools, it gets distributed to the schools, and the base amount for, the regular traditional schools is somewhere around 6,000 or over, a little over 6,000. When they distribute it to charters, that per pupil is higher. It's about $3,000 more under the city school system's way of distributing the funding, and that's due to the state law that charters have to be funded at a commensurate rate as traditional schools. So they're responsible for paying for teacher development, professional development, and other things, whereas traditional schools get those services through central office. So there is a difference in funding.
Sure, I get that. I was on the SIT team when they started school-based budgeting, the school improvement team. I was the parent member of the SIT team where my kids went to elementary school, and when they rolled all that school-based budgeting out. And I can tell you, you're right, because the school that my kids went to got very little extra funding, and our PTA raised the money to hire a librarian, a gym teacher,
But just hear what we're just saying, Delegate, that PTAs had to raise the money for a librarian?
Well,
that's crazy.
That's crazy. 15 years ago.
But that's happening now.
We
have a school in Baltimore City that is going to a GoFundMe campaign to be able to fund the textbooks for their school.
Well, that's all the more reason to say, where the heck is the money going?
Because
at $17,000 a student, you shouldn't have to hire a librarian. And we should want a complete audit of where this money is going.
So, Frank, I'm asking you, let me just jump to this audit question and see. I'm curious what the Education Coalition's position is in the audit and what Dr. Ellington's thought about this as well. Frank?
About audits, you're saying?
Yeah.
The Baltimore Education Coalition hasn't taken on that issue. We don't have a position on audits. We are certainly concerned and interested in seeing that money being well spent.
Thank you. I think that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that, because our students deserve that. They deserve to know that, we're maximizing every single dollar for them before we go and ask for more. Let's put it in perspective here, and I agree with you that our students in Baltimore City do have additional needs. I agree with that. But I'm a legislator here in Annapolis looking at state funding of schools. Baltimore City Public Schools from the state get $12,245 per pupil. In Baltimore County, where they have a lot of schools around the city that face the exact same challenges as the city, and those schools get $6,400 per student.
Right.
And then, you go down to some of our other Wooster counties, actually, which is Ocean City, the highest funded school system in the state. So Baltimore City is not the highest. But what you'll find interesting is the state contribution to Wooster's $4,000 per student, and the locals put in $12,000 per. So, and that's their prerogative. And And look, in the state, we're saying let's work together. But you'll find a history over the years that the city has decreased their funding for public schools,
but is there a difference
while coming to the state and asking us for more?
But there's a difference between Worcester County and Baltimore City. Worcester County is also Ocean City,
which is
a huge financial base. Baltimore City doesn't have that financial base.
Right.
No matter what the numbers say, we're talking about the numbers of real estate. That doesn't trickle down to the citizens in Baltimore, nor to the budget in Baltimore City.
But at the same time, you're giving developers these huge tax cuts.
Well, you're not going to get an argument about that out of me.
We're saying let's work together. But you have to hold the city accountable. When you see these articles in the Sun that come up year after year, you know, two or three times they've lost $50 million. And I want to hear somebody say, this isn't acceptable. So, we have to keep track of every penny that we get, and we need to be a good steward of every dollar that they send us.
So, Lawrence,
Frank, let me
just read this tweet, and it'll come back to you and come back to Ronnie. The tweet Lawrence Brown tweeted in earlier, please connect this scandal with the willful negligence of our city officials in passing TIFs that cut Baltimore City Public School funding. But go ahead, Frank.
I was going to say to the delegate that you know, if you spent any time in Baltimore City, you would know that Baltimore City education advocates, as well as community advocates and just advocates citywide, are always at city council hearings and school board meetings, you know, calling for accountability and better spending. And, you know, we're doing what we can to hold the system accountable. So that is happening. And I just wanted to say, I wanted to go back to the funding issue. You know, the state education formula is wealth equalized. The fact that we get more state money is by design. You know, low wealth districts should get more from the state. Well, why have a state? And the other issue I wanted to come back to is the money for charter schools and, you know, the voucher private schools. You know, I think, as Ronnie said, it is really kind of diverting attention from the real issue. And if the vouchers were allowed to go forward, that will just take money from the public schools. There's always going to be tens of thousands of kids in public schools. And if money is diverted from that towards private schools, then it leaves public schools with less resources. Charter schools, you know, we have several great ones in the city. And I think, you know, there's a conversation going on about charters and traditionals now. But in the end, if we continue funding charter schools the way they are funded in Baltimore City, it will bankrupt the system, and it will take money from the traditional schools.
Well, I would say the math works the opposite of that, and that, you know, if you're delivering a better education for less money, you're not bankrupting the system. I'll tell you that my mother-in-law taught in Baltimore City public schools for 25 years in a very, very impoverished area of Baltimore City where three generations of kids came through her classroom, and the school system has failed, you know, over and over and over. And we have to look for new ways. We have to look for innovative ways. I mean, look how the cell phones transform society and our lives. You know, we have to embrace technology, embrace change, look for ways to, I mean, this is about the children. This is not about protecting someone's budget. This is about saying, how can we ensure that our kids in Baltimore City are getting a quality education? And the conversation continually goes to, you know, it's all about the money, it's all about the money. And then you turn around, they give a TIF to a developer that, you know,
but even
then
though,
they
if
can't
you had
afford
a...
to put their share in,
right.
And then they lose $50 million. And, you know, where's the person sticking up for the kids and sticking up for accountability?
I mean, I think that there are people in the city who think the TIFs and pilots should not be happening. They also think the police department needs to be cut so more money can be put in the school system, which makes real sense to a lot of people in this town. We have a tweet in here from Sharika Bolden tweeted in to the delegate on the Mark Steiner show, who says quality of schools is the issue. Please come visit. I'll give you a personal tour. And you have a thought? I mean,
just interesting to me when people get to run the conversation, they get to talk about what they want to talk about. And it's really just apparent to me as a person, who has been engaged in this for a while, that when you get to run the conversation, you get to discuss what gets on the table to be discussed. So I agree with the delegate around it's not just a money issue. We can both agree that it's not just about money. And there are other factors that are at play that are not just about the quality of education and performance, because we have a correlation between quality of education and performance, and sometimes there are mediating factors that are also not addressed. So that's really my only point here. And it's just very interesting how the conversation moves to chicken. And, you know, say it's just interesting how we move the conversation from what the really central issue is, which is historic inequities that are playing out as we speak.
Well, I would love to hear you say it is shameful, shameful that that money that was supposed to educate our poorest and most needy kids went to fried chicken dinners and cruises around the Inner Harbor.
I think it's shameful for the historic inequities that have happened throughout this country. It's a lot of shame to go around. If we're going to do shame, we can shame a lot of people, not just the chicken eaters, okay?
Well, so let's
call it. Okay, so let's just call it that.
I think that defend the fried chicken dinners,
I'm not defending anything.
Excuse me, Sam. If you're a delegate, I would just throw in here, let Frank have a final word before we have to go and read this email that came in, because we do have to take a break. But, I mean, raising up things like fried chicken dinners is kind of a racial
diversion,
boogeyman.
Right,
that,
a diversion
that
factor.
That really affects the conversation.
Oh, I don't mean it that way at all. Come on,
okay.
Now.
Yes, it
I'm
does,
though.
I'm reading
it off the era. I'm reading this right off of the audit done by the Inspector General. I am really disappointed that you would go that direction.
Yeah, you went that direction.
There is nothing in my comments that should be construed like that. So, and if there was anyone that took it that way, I apologize, because that was never, if you knew me, that would never be my intention.
Let me make some final thoughts in here. An email came in from Allie. M, private school tuition only pays for a fraction of per pupil cost, especially the Catholic schools she named are heavily subsidized by the church and by alumni.
They're not subsidized by the church.
By alumni.
They're not.
And per pupil funding in Baltimore City isn't $17,000 if you compare to what tuition covers. It's less than $10,000, but we'll get into that another day because we can't argue that at the moment. And we can't get to any of these other tweets coming in here. I wish we could. But Frank, a thought from you before we have to go.
Yeah. You know, we can find a quick all thought. We can find all the waste in the system where money should be going to the classrooms. All the education advocates in Baltimore City are interested in that, but it is still distracting from the main point.
Thank you.
You know, you can find all of that money. It's not going to make our system adequately funded. So let's keep focused on what's going to fund our students adequately. We can look at innovation, but those innovative programs need money too, such as community school programs, which we are advocating for, pre-K, early learning, things like that. So I just encourage everyone to get involved with this adequacy study, and let's get it right this time, and let's not ignore the things that Ronnie brought up in terms of the decades and centuries of inequities and disparities that we experience in the city.
And the ACLU, Maryland Reform tweeted in, then we got a final thought from the delegate, remember, it is the state that's decided how much money each school system needs. City has the highest number of children with disabilities. We got to go to break. Delegate Shalega, one quick final thought.
I just want to thank you for having me on the program. And, you know, in the end, I think there are many more things we agree on than disagree on. And I think, you know, we all expect and want a better education for our kids. And I think I would just advocate for using every tool in the toolbox and looking at to deliver the best education we can for all of our kids in Baltimore City.
House Minority Whip Delegate Kathy Shalega, Frank Pantanella, Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Morgan State University. Thank the three of you so much for being with us the last half hour, and all of you for tweeting in and emailing in. We didn't get to your phone calls because they were about the issue of Green Mountain West, which we have to come back to another day, and really couldn't take calls that diverted us back to that because we had to finish this conversation. But I thank you all for calling and writing in. Stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be looking at a new play in town called The Meeting.